Well, good morning and welcome to our little discussion here. Certainly looking forward to some interactive relating back and forth here. And if you're a little bit like me, you might be struggling to go from some very profound teaching to simply some practical numbers. So I can certainly bear with you because I can identify with that. However, we do want to take a look at this subject here. We do have a handout that's prepared, and that title is A Guide for Obtaining Report Card Averages. So the talk here is maybe focused more heavily on that if you think about report cards rather than struggling to get the title here now that was given about maybe consistent grading methods. But they, of course, do interact. Just as I was thinking about this here this morning, when we think about what is the importance of these numbers, some of you might identify a little bit what I have here, and we'll hopefully get into that. This is the layout of the report cards that we use and the subjects. And then here are some marks. They're all hypothetical for James and Owen there. But what is the importance of this? And I just had to think, possibly you haven't all taught and you've looked at your children's report cards and okay, good, and that's great. And you kind of move on. A way for a businessman to maybe identify a little bit more would be simply, you know, what is the benefit of doing your year end and your income tax and all of that. That might be one comparison to make. You can be ever so excited all year long. You can have lots of enthusiasm and maybe be doing some things right. And yet, finally, at the end of the year, if it just doesn't reach together, then just your enthusiasm alone won't be success in the line of business. And it's much the same for a teacher. And individual students vary, of course, but finally, if you have a class average that's failing, then maybe there is something that points back to the teacher as well. So laying out a little bit of a just where this came from, this talk, myself and Robert Heatwold were asked by the Christian Resource Committee whether we would prepare I guess I'll call it a document or a paper that I want to hand out here. So we were asked to do this, and we spent some time just in phone calls and so on. I enjoyed getting to know Robert better than I did. It was a pleasure. And then after we had revised it a few times, we sent it off, or Robert sent it off to some of his teacher acquaintances in the U.S. and so on. And then kind of took that feedback and came up with what we have here. And exactly why, I thought we'll maybe get into that a little bit later, but that gives you somewhat of an overview of how this started. So what we have here is five main topics, or how we divided this up. And the first one is why this guide has been developed. So that is where we'll get into that more. And then recording marks from daily work, tests, quizzes, and reviews to be used for obtaining the subject averages. So what that means is simply this would be the subject average for vocabulary, and this would be for penmanship, and so on. And then just a little paragraph on alphabetical grades, and then obtaining the final average, and what constitutes a failing grade. And the reason I thought I'll read those off, if you have questions and you can think about, oh, maybe that fits into that section, and bring it up then, although there's no bad question, so to speak, either. So what I thought we'll do here is actually start with what constitutes a failing grade. Maybe that's a bit of a negative, and it's the last thing on our sheet, but somehow I was inspired to do that first. And before we do that, why don't we maybe just, and you may crank your heads around if you want, so we won't do personal introductions, but when I was thinking about this, for most of us, our frame of reference on this subject would go back to when we were in school. And I presume some of you went to different types of schools if you moved or something like that, but if you think about maybe grade 6, 7, 8, where you formed some impressions and you remember that. So I decided to break up just a little survey here between, this is simply a public school and a Christian day school and the parochial school system here in Ontario, and then other, and I might pick on you to express what that was if you're an American or if you went to school in Mexico or something like that. So hands up if you went to public school for your mains. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4. All right, thank you. How many went to a Christian day school? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. How many went to a parochial school here in Ontario? So it'd be Brother Alvin Burkhardt and myself. All right, and how many are other? All right. So it looks like for quite a few of you, your frame of reference is the Christian day school, which I was thinking maybe there might be a few more that would have gone to the parochial school system, but maybe we'll discuss that a little bit anyhow. If you see here the discussion zone for passing grade, Brother Robert and I had kind of worked that, and we divided it up into these different grades, and what I want to write here is in your notes, so you don't need to write this all down necessarily. And it would be interesting to open up what you are doing. Does anybody know for your school what you would consider getting to be? You can see here, we ended up with discussion zones rather than just to say that at 80 it's failing or 90 it's failing. But do you know where your grade one teacher would be wondering a little bit about your student? Anybody know what you would do?
Probably low 80s, you would start. You may not be right off, but you'd start wondering.
You'd start wondering? All right. Anybody else? If you're a principal at your school and...
We'd be the same.
Okay. All right. Which I... 90? Then you question that. All right. Which you may speak up if you have more. So what we have here is from 88 to 92 is what we're suggesting is the discussion zone. So in theory, if somebody has an 87, please still discuss it. Don't just send it home with a student and the parents are shocked that their child is doing grade one again. That isn't the point. But from what we've discussed and laid out, if a grade one child has an 87 with a curriculum that, and that's something I should have added, it makes a difference what curriculum you're using. So please consider that. But with kind of a rod and staff, CLE, EMP-based curriculum, it seems that this ends up being a fair discussion zone. And if you care to differ, that's fine with your situation. And this talk isn't about myself or Dayspring, but I thought I will bring in some examples. And here would be one that we had a child, it was actually maybe in grade two, trying to get this back together, but regardless, that was struggling. And yet, and I was involved on the board or the chairman actually, and I think she had a 91, and then maybe her last grade was a 90. Just to give you a bit of an idea. And the teacher would have felt this child should repeat. And I struggled with that a little bit personally, like a 90. In the parochial school system, a 60 was the passing. And so, okay, what's going on here? And yet time did eventually prove. We did a conditional promotion, I think it was, on to the next grade. And time has proved that it didn't work. So that gives you a little bit of an idea. That was at a 90, 91, right around there, and she just couldn't keep up. So the teacher's prediction ended up true, if you want to put it that way. I'm not saying we did the wrong thing to try it, but that is where we came out at. And then as we work our way down through here, you'll see that we're actually dropping. So here we had an 86 to a 90. For grade two, and then grades 3 and 4, there we're suggesting 78 to 84. And what we're trying to establish here is for sure grade 1 and 2, and even by grade 3 and 4, to some degree, this is your, I'm not saying to draw a hard line here, your last chance to actually get a child to repeat an entire grade. Just from an emotional standpoint, as you get into these years, to actually pull that child out and put them maybe back into the next room or something like that. It maybe has been done, but there are some question marks there. And so in grade 1 and 2, in particular, if the parents accept it, that it's no problem at all with the child. And that's maybe a different subject. It can be a challenge sometimes with the parents, but if the parents are accepting, no problem with the child, and then you're grade 3 and 4, there you're taking another, you know, if they're struggling. And it can happen through there that you'll have a child that just simply school becomes a grind, and you're still doing them well to repeat that fourth grade. But then from grade 5 to 10 is where we have the zone from 70 to 80. So you can see it's somewhat opened up and is lower there. So just before I open that up for discussion yet, I just thought I'd share my own experience. And my thought was not to bring attention to myself, but if there are people who were in the parochial system, and there's not many here, but you might have fellow board members and so on, and they struggle to connect with this, and then just to relate for myself, I was a late bloomer. My birthday's in December, so I was 5 years old in grade 1, and I would say probably all the way through, I don't remember grade 1 and 2 that much, 3, 4, 5, and 6, I presume I was getting between 65 and 74, somewhere in there, just to give you an idea. So it was a grind, but I never failed an entire grade. And then, but finally, in grade 8, I just blossomed more, and I had what I would have considered a really high grade. I still remember this as my average came out at a 83, and I was very pleased with that. That was hard work. I enjoyed school, enjoyed my teacher, and worked hard, and got that 83. And just to give you a little bit of an idea, I remember one test, a history test, and I enjoyed history, that I got 100% on. And my children would come home. I don't think they always remember to tell me when they get 100% on a CLE social studies test. So there is a difference, is what I'm pointing out. So my teacher, I still remember that as well. I got 100%, and I hope there was some praise there, actually. Don't even remember that. But the note, it was historically 100%. And I remember that yet. She didn't bother writing that for when you got 80 or 70. But I wasn't a good speller, but she was marking for historical content. So I got 100% there. So, but then moving on, my point here isn't to knock one curriculum over another, but I did do grade 9 and 10 within the parochial system, but it was a complete CLE. We would have had 5 subjects in CLE. So this is the same student, and I don't think I really got that much more intelligent from one year to the next. But then in grade 9, my average was 97. So I'm just showing you that, and that, by the way, is not on here. But my point just simply is that there is a difference between the two. And I'm not saying wrong or right, but just make sure that you take note of that. So here I have a question that I haven't fully, have been in discussions, but I don't know the answer myself. Can somebody explain why or what the difference is between, I hope I'm using the right kind of marker here, a dry erase. What is the difference between the parochial system and, like, here we're at the 88, 92. Would you be prepared, Robert, to explain that, or anybody else?
I would generalize it, Canadian-American.
Okay. So what are you saying there, the ones based?
Well, the school of my generation, over 95.
Just didn't.
And the system that many get in the 90s says there's something different about content and approach.
Mm-hmm.
And tests.
Okay.
When I was in high school, first class honors was 75 or better.
That's right.
And just a fraction of the students got there.
Yeah.
Just a fraction.
So did you?
I don't think I ever did.
Okay.
I got second class honors some years. That was 66 to 75.
Okay. So were you? Was it just so much more content that you needed to try to memorize, or what? Is the difference there between?
We're less objective.
Okay.
They're more subjective. But my question is, how do you get a 92 for oral reading? How do you decide that he's 92 and not 94?
Right. If you're just looking at.
That's just a mindset. I would never give someone 92 in my classroom for oral reading. He would maybe get 80 if he's a good reading student.
Okay. So if you do that, Are your discussion zones, would they not be compatible with what we drew up here? Okay.
That's what I was wondering, and maybe you'll get to that, but how the grades actually, the way the teacher relates to it, my guess is that it could be the same results of the test, you give them to two different teachers and the grades would come back different. Or maybe I say the report card. And the way they handle, you know, how do you make sure the teachers are being consistent with the grading? And that's probably what you're going to get to yet.
We hope to get to some of that. I would suggest I mentioned the CLE, social studies. With the way those tests are set up, there might be two questions that require, it's not even an essay answer barely because there's four lines, but that's about it. And the rest of it, it's either right or wrong. So unless the teacher's making mistakes or being charitable on purpose and changing the marks, literally, I don't think there's much variation there for the end result. Just on that, for example, I certainly agree here, but on what I just said, does somebody see it differently, how the teacher would come up with a 90 for two different teachers marking the same test, the one would have an 80 and the other 90. Somebody know how you do that? Whereas if Arne Leonci has taken a look at the CLE tests and says they're too easy and makes his own, then that's a total different scenario. The history tests that I made for my students, they took long to mark, like for grade 7 and 8. They were essay-type answers. They maybe needed sometimes a second sheet of foolscap, like written on both sides, starting on the next one. And that takes some effort. If you're looking at a paragraph that's worth 4 points, or maybe even 7, depending how, and you're trying to pick out those points as you go through, and it's a different type of learning or a different type of test, anyhow. And so I can see if your school has based, even though you have maybe the American curriculum, but you've managed to get some of that into it, and then you need to, you may not just take this and simply roll it out. So back to your question there, John. If we don't get into as far as you'd like, please ask again about the individual teachers, because that's a very good something to mention there. Another one on this passing discussion and so on that we could maybe open up for a bit, or we put a little note into our document here. How much weight do you put on the teacher's thought versus the chairman and the principal? How do you, this is when you come to a questionable number at the end, you average this up and this is what Owen has. Does anybody care to share? That's very good. So
you hear sometimes, yes, Teachers talking about teaching the test.
Mm-hmm.
That's like having recess, I think.
Is this discussion zone, is that, so grade 5 to 10 to 7 to 80, is that a report card grand average or is that per subject?
I think we were focusing on the actual grand average, but I would think it would apply, say, somebody for spelling here, 72, or, well, this one is maybe in more, trying to line things up, a 56 in math. I guess that's a little extreme, maybe, but even otherwise, they would, somebody with a reading comprehension of 75 in that type of curriculum would probably be finding a bit of a struggle. What is your thought when you just look at that?
Well, if he has a 56 and a 75, but he's a really good speller and he's really good at memory, so he gets 100% in spelling, 100% in memory, there goes your average.
Yeah, which...
So is it really accurate?
Yeah. Well, that's what we hope to address then yet as well. How do you actually find the final average? So maybe we should move on. I feel that I'm not doing... Go ahead.
I just thought we should clarify that discussion is over. What we mean by that, and I think you had said it, at least on the one side, a grade one student that grades at 86 or 87 probably needs to. Mm-hmm. And a grade one student that grades at 93 or 94 probably doesn't need to.
Mm-hmm.
The discussion zone from 88 to 92 gives room to decide in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes, if you make just a certain number, sometimes it's, there are other variables.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we felt that it would be wise to have a little bit of a space between those two numbers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think the question of what John said, that's very real. That's where we're trying to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
How we get those numbers.
So that'll come in the section about how we actually obtain a report card averages rather than just taking a simple average. We wanted to present something. So I certainly appreciate that. What I'm thinking to tie together, and maybe we can't, before we move on. So for those of you that look at this number and it looks shockingly high, I'm just wondering if there's a way to bring that together yet. Those of you that have been working for the last 20 years with a 80 to 84 for grade one, you know, if that's working for you with your curriculum, we're not... Robert and I aren't standing here saying this is what you must do. It's just simply a presentation of what we feel we've seen there.
And these numbers, we didn't just pull them out of the sky. I mean, they've been at institutes or numbers close to them.
Mm-hmm.
And when we handed them to others, they were fine with the numbers. I think there is a lot of people using numbers much like that.
As a board at Dayspring, we had tried to bring it together. Do you remember what I had on the first? I think we had 90. For grade one, we were, because the student that I mentioned, her March report card would have been a 91, and our discussion zone started at 90, let's say 85 to 90. So technically, she wasn't even in the discussion zone. So this is what we ended up with there. All right. Well, thank you. Hopefully that's warmed things up a bit. So taking a look at why this guide was developed, and here is where, if I may talk about Dayspring a little bit, we had, as a board, made a decision, we discussed this, and saw a need to come up with something that provides continuity from one classroom to the next, and even from one teacher to the next. So I think those are maybe two, it doesn't need a long explanation, but we had a teacher change in the senior room, and then when I tried to compare what the previous teacher was doing to the next one, there was a little bit of a fuzziness there. I'm not saying that one way was wrong and the other one right, that's not at all. They can both be right, but it does make a difference on how you find your average then, which maybe after we're done with this, why we'll move to that. So if one teacher, so let's just leave the how we got these numbers for now. We'll do it backwards. So one teacher came up with these, and another teacher came up with the exact same ones, which they probably won't. But we'll just say that they did this time for Owen here. And then depending how you go about averaging this, a simple average is just math, and you better all get the same answer. But there are different ways to take a look at it. So between our two senior teachers there, there was some variation there. And I think it was maybe because of that I had been asking them questions there. So I asked our two new room and intermediate teachers, and they were doing a simple average, which again, I'm not saying that was wrong, but it was different again than our senior room. And so, yeah, point one would be the continuity from teacher to teacher and teacher exchange, and also from one classroom to the next. And then you can take that a little further, and here it's an if teachers do compare marks from school to school, and I'm personally not sure how helpful that is, but if they do, then it might help if we would gear toward using the same system to find those marks. And then another one, maybe I'll just read the paragraph that we came up with for point three. Parents, teachers, and board members all enjoy when their students do well at school. While this in itself is not wrong, it can lead to problems if we let undue pressure mount in regards to wanting to see higher and higher marks from our students. While class averages may provide some benefit for the teacher and principal to evaluate which direction the class in question is headed, there is also the possibility that individual teachers could succumb to the perceived pressure to have their students score unrealistically high grades. They may feel pressure to enter the marks in a manner that may not properly reflect the students' abilities, all in an effort to succeed, in quotations, by seeing their class average climb higher than last term or higher than or equal to their teacher acquaintances' class averages. While a guide will not completely eliminate these phenomena, we trust it will help steer us in the right direction. So I just have a question, if you understood what I read there. How many of you as board or principal have felt that your teachers were under some type of pressure in that line to get their grades higher? I know we did. There's a few hands going up, and that's fine if you didn't. But that was another thing, that a bit of an impetus from a board level, that we were wondering now where, like none of us as a board were coming in and saying, well, this is poor, class average has to go from 91 to 93, and yet there seemed to be a little bit of that, some pressure coming from somewhere. And go ahead.
Is part of that pressure the pressure of our curriculum? We have this curriculum that just expects our students to go so far. And if we have someone that doesn't, then, I mean, they are just way behind. And it automatically casts a bit of a stigma on them. But maybe that's more of a people problem, too.
Does somebody have a comment on that? It was a question there. Does our curriculum lead toward that? I'll admit I wouldn't have right thought of it. I would have gone more to the people end of it, but I sometimes need some time to think. That would be your thought, that it, you think it does?
I don't know.
Okay.
I've wondered sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, we don't want to fall in the ditch of not expecting it.
That's right.
For students.
For sure.
So mm-hmm. I have just an idea.
Yeah.
Question.
It just, go ahead.
To learn that a certain publisher, none that we use much material from, says after these tests are graded, you should multiply them by the marks by 1.4 to get a realistic mark for the report card.
By 1.4?
You multiply the mark by 1.4.
Didn't they mean to multiply the points by 1.4?
I don't.
Maybe I'm not talking.
Well, you're, no, you're sorry.
It's more realistic than if you get a 95 times 1.4.
Yeah, but if, I don't know, say 99 plus.
But the argument, I don't know what you're talking about,
or what your son told me.
But if you, but the argument, yeah, I talked to the man at the point, he said, they made that book with the intention that it would be taught by a man, but that's all. And they said it's easy to make a book simpler, it's not easy to make it difficult. And so they made a difficult book. And he said, in your situation, the way I teach school, he said, you'll have to change. that opened a new window of perspective to me as to what, how they made their books.
So they were saying to do that in order to fit with what we have here. So if 60 would have been the passing, then you could have probably just left them. Is that?
All come from your perspective about that. But when most of our subjects, the students are getting 90 or 95 in English and math, but in this particular subject, we can barely get 60. Well, we'll have to answer that somehow.
So I'm curious, you don't have to say the publisher, but what is the subject that you're?
Well, there are a couple different subjects. I mean, geography is one.
Okay.
But even algebra, I was sitting in an algebra class years ago at a teacher's institute, and I was kind of amazed these wise old teachers were talking about changing the grades, like altering the point count, and they just expected that's what you do in algebra because it's not. But I can relate to that. Because, like I said, if all at once there's one subject, we simply can't perform. We can say what we want as adults, but the students are going to sit there and say, how's this work? And the morale goes out the bottom.
So you're making an adjustment so that it's similar to the rest of your curriculum. Yeah, sure.
They're learning. We don't wonder if they're learning.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why mm-hmm. our teacher, if all the whole grade did poor on the test, he would say, I can still see a rib in his chin, and I guess we're going to curve this. And get curved up.
Curving.
He called it curving the grade. He just curved everybody's body. I forget what this formula was, but he had a certain way of curving the grade. So he figured, well, you know, everybody is down here, and it would stop when you need to. I guess we're going to curve it.
What happened with the teacher's grade?
Yeah.
It didn't get curved down.
Opinions might vary on what John just shared. I would personally really caution that.
That's why I asked the question.
Okay. It, for what Robert and Arnold were poking at each other for there a little bit, you know, if on the whole subject and you do that consistently, I can see there's some room for that. If you're teaching English and you get into a tough section and their marks go down, then their marks go down. I would actually feel very strongly on that. If it's just that individual, yeah, if that's what they got. Life is real after grade 8. So be my suggestion there. Well, maybe we should soon move on, although this phenomenon that we're talking about and that pressure, it does. If the teachers are under that pressure, then that tendency to want to help their students or curb the marks up, it can be there. I've witnessed a teacher helping an older student on a test, and I'm not saying there could never be a place for that if reading comprehension is poor and they don't understand what they're even supposed to do in geography, but in general, I would really hesitate to have teachers help too much, especially if it's when they're under pressure. If the teacher is feeling pressure for the student to have a higher grade and then they succumb to that pressure. It's that type of thing that I'm hoping we can somehow back off on that. All right, we have 50 minutes here. Why don't we take a look at James and Owen here, and if you left your phones and your vehicles, that's good. If you didn't, pull them out and get the calculators going. And so let's say from here over, you figure out Owen's average and just do a simple average. Add them up, divide by 14 maybe, and you over here, you take a look at James and you tell me what his average is. Yes, 14 if you get them all. And round it to the nearest tenth. If I did my math right, this one should come out evenly, and this one, if you can round. You may do it with mental arithmetic as well. I told you to pull your phones out. So if you have an answer, you can give it, and somebody else can. What did we come up with for Owen? Is anybody? 83. All right. And what about for James? So 91.9, which would round to 92. And so that's just simply using a simple average, which I hope we all understand here. I won't go into how the mechanics of that work. And if you look at James here, and we come up with, now this is basing on, you don't all need to agree, but this is basing on an older student and looking at a 70 to 80 for passing, just for, so we have a frame of reference that makes, hopefully makes some sense. And you're looking down through there, as a teacher, you'd say, yeah, he's doing fine. Looks like his math, for example, 92, and all right. Now, if you look at Owen, and he came up with an 83, and I went a little extreme, I'll admit, but an 83, so he does not even enter the discussion zone. So a question I would have, looking at that from a teacher's angle, will that student be experiencing any frustration at school, or at least difficulty? There's some heads nodding there. Definitely that he will. So if you think of something like a math at a 56, English maybe even struggling some there, your reading comprehension at a 75, so on. So the question now is, what do we do about that? Is there a way that we can get an average that better reflects the student's actual ability in the subjects that you'll spend the most time on at school? So you think of your English and your math. And one way, and we're not presenting that one here as an on paper, I know of our one teacher head, and it seemed to come from Colton Corinth down there, or at another teacher that was familiar with it, to take the percentage of time that you spend on math and percentage of time in English, break up your whole week, and it takes longer doing report cards, but you'd have to take each subject, each subject, well, they'd still be here, but to find your average, you'd have to go times a certain percentage, so maybe 20% and 17%, and then add those all up. So that's one method that has been used already. But the method that we want to show here is something that I believe attains the desired result and keeps it, I can't say simple, but keeps it simple enough that hopefully all teachers can understand. And we probably won't have time to discuss, so I'll just simply pick the ones that we took. And so if you take, and I don't know if you'd noticed this, but these two young boys both got exactly the same on six different subjects. And I did that on purpose again. And these down here. So this is how we drew this up. But as a board, you can look at that and decide whether you agree or not. But we took these subjects and called them, we've actually implemented this at DaySpring. We've done two report cards on this already. And so the rest of them is what we're calling the core subjects. And you'll have to make some adjustments for the junior room. And you mightn't agree exactly. Some people don't even do vocabulary. There's some variables there. But if you're with me in what we're looking at, and I want to be clearly understood, something like memory, I think God values that as higher than math, if you follow what I'm saying. If you think about, you know, preaching God's word or just simply in that line, memory is a wonderful gift, and I'm intrigued when you know your son sits down and cram memories, which doesn't help a whole lot, but can do a whole page the next day just so he can get his four candies or whatever, and it's like, wow. I wasn't able to do that as a scholar, but he just did that this week here. So memory is very important, but the amount of time at school on memory isn't that high, if you follow what I'm saying. So you can have a student with 99 or 100 on memory, and that'll help to pull their grade up, as this here, 94, helped Owen out, and yet he's possibly frustrated with how things are going. And so to come up with an average that more accurately reflects their ability, why don't we just take the time to do one this time, and I'll write the other one in. But if you add up these six, And then you don't have to do that even. I think I have it here. If we add up those six and average them, you come up with a 92.7. So those six subjects, take them together and average them, and you get 92.7. And now, just simply, you can go ahead and do this. Add up the remaining ones and this one, and then get your average. So part of the reason I'm taking the time to get you to do this, I want you to go out here empowered that you understand what I'm showing you. So add those up, plus the average of the others. So we want to get them in there, but not as much weight. So you do that and divide it by 9, I believe it is. And what do you come up with there? All right, thank you. And if you want to, you can do this one, but I came up with 91.4. So if you see what happens there, and I almost hesitate to use the word an average student, but let's say James is an average student. I am using that word. Notice that his mark dropped. I guess if you round it, it would be 92 and then 91. That's what the student would see. So if you would implement something like that at your school, your average student might drop a bit. But what we're really looking at is over here, and notice how this dropped Owen into the discussion zone, a mark that I would feel would more realistically reflect his actual academic ability on those core subjects. And just to help you, give you a bit of an idea, I was working this already last term and took one student from the senior room and one from the intermediate room that I knew struggled. So maybe very good at actual oral reading, but didn't understand maybe what they read, for example. And you can have a very artsy type of person that can sing and good at memory work, but it's tough. And so the one intermediate and senior, they both dropped, I forget exactly what it was, but these are real numbers, 4.5% to 5%. And I think it was good. It's just if and when you do implement this, make sure you communicate with the parents. Don't just do it halfway through the term either. This would be something that you want to take a look at. So we've done 2 report cards now. So what I talked about was just my digging into it. But now that we're actually doing it, our senior room teacher, I just talked to him on the way here again this morning, the difference between this number and this number, now I'm talking class averages, was 1.5% both times. And I find that interesting. So we're using this one. That's our official board decision to go with a more complicated one that I got you to do. But he's still with his spreadsheet. It's not much work to see it the other way. So the whole class average dropped 1.5%. And I think part of the reason might be back to what Arnold had suggested. What's a 92 in oral reading? If teachers are, you know, if you look at art, it's nice that most of us are charitable, or maybe it's nice if we're all. And we tend to give the benefit of a doubt, if that makes sense. Like, who really wants to give a C- for music, for example? Right? Okay, we have one. So bless you for the courage to do that. But I'm just wondering if that's part of what we're seeing here. So the class average dropped by 1.5. There were 2 that went up. They were both boys, just for interest's sake, and it makes sense to me when I'm looking at that. The one went up 0.6 the one time and 0.5 the other. The other one went up 0.3 the one time and went down 0.1 the other. So you'll have very few students that actually go up, and you should have very few that go down the 5, but it is possible. So any questions on what we did there mathematically, or if you want to challenge the concept, or just any discussion on that?
Did you take that first average, then add the others to it, and then do your division? Sorry, I didn't quite. Yeah, okay.
Okay, I didn't quite.
2.7, you added the rest.
Yes.
And then divide it by that.
Nine.
So those six non-core are 1 second.
Yeah, it's a simple average again with this one along in, if you want to look at it that way. So, yes, no, I appreciate that.
Is the aim here, and I'm still thinking about the question about the culture of excellence, is the aim here to not have struggling schools? Is that what we're trying to do?
You're thinking when it comes to...
Like this, we see him struggling in reading comprehension in 75. So our aim is to not have students that struggle in school.
I'm not sure if I'm qualified to answer if I got your question. I would say, I hope not. I struggled in school, and it was good for me. But on the other hand, if we do have a student that is frustrated to the point that it's not working, then sometimes it's better to drop back, even just in that subject, for example. And I would say this mark would maybe better reflect who the parents, or you can end up with a block that the parents think their student is doing fine, and the teacher is saying, ooh, but they're pretty well frustrated. And if your mark more accurately reflects that, then maybe you can, so this is an older student, you don't want to have him fail the whole grade, but you're saying, you know what, I think we'll learn more next year by doing that over again. Did I understand your question at all, or were you?
I just didn't know. Maybe we're too hesitant sometimes. Like I'm thinking about our school. Maybe we're too hesitant to help students out that way. Maybe that's part of the culture.
By dropping
a grade, or like how quick should you be to do that? I mean,
what are some thoughts on that? How quick should you be? Are you talking now about in the junior grades?
All across? I mean, I guess if you never do it, then it's a bit of a stigma if somebody does.
I think that's what we have to overcome. When we fail a child, we are failing him with his best interest in mind. We want him to, it would be better for him to move on to the grades than to struggle all the way through.
Isn't that a struggle that the public school systems have? That if you almost can't fail somebody, then you can pull them all the way through. And unfortunately, there's high school students that basically can't read. And that is a, did I give enough here? Should be one each. So that was our final buzzer already. And I detect we're not really finished. Maybe we should just take a quick look at on the second page, the alphabetical grades. We don't, I guess, need to discuss that. I would have been interested how many of you would have been familiar with seeing alphabetical or letter grades here. And I presume quite a few of you were. And at Dayspring, we had made an official for our school what an A plus and A minus means, all the way down through. And that's what was on here initially. But then between Robert and I, we discovered, I think we had four different things what these grades mean. So a D in one place might have meant a 60, and in another place maybe even a 75, and so on. So we are actually recommending that the numerical grades percentages mean the same over the whole world. So you don't have to rush into that, but you can, food for thought. And then, sorry, backing up, it starts in the front page already. And this question, I'm trying to remember who asked it, and it was a very good one. How do we come up with these actual marks? And I guess I'll need to let you read this. And if you have questions, give Robert or myself a call. There's actually some practical advice on how much weight to put on daily work, how much to put on reviews and tests and so on. And then there's a paragraph somewhere about the juniors. I think maybe Jonathan had mentioned, what work are you grading what the student did or the teacher? Like if you help them, then you actually need to take that in consideration. For the grade one, for example, the curriculum we're using doesn't have any math tests. And so the marks have to come from the daily work. And that's fine, that's right. It's just where you are going to take that mark, be careful. that you don't go and grade your own skills. It does need to reflect the students. All right, well, thank you. Any parting question that's burning in your mind yet? Or you got some food for thought here?
Those six grades that you circled there, in this case, they were all the same, but I'm just looking at this paper. You would always use those six to take off an average.
That is our recommendation for a starting base. There was some discussion. Somebody had thought composition should not be along in there, just for example. So we're not, if I hear 5 years from now that you have five in that, that's no offense. It's just what we took a look at as, you know, composition, you maybe do once a week. The next person might have Bible once a week, but somehow I like Bible in with the others. So there's a bit of personal preference along in here as well,
yeah,
I would say. Okay. So maybe, thank you, Robert. There is a paragraph in here as well. While not part of the core reason for this guide, a side benefit is the possibility of developing a spreadsheet that would work well for all teachers at your school to use to file their grades. So for myself, I taught 6 years, and it took until the sixth year that I could use my fifth year spreadsheet to actually, so that's how long, and I'm not a whiz at a computer, but I had got it to be able to do this and even, anyway, to get that average there. So I think there's tremendous potential there to help our teachers out, but I did ask our teacher, and I think I may say this, I wondered, so what is the possibility, if we have a spreadsheet that works like this for the teachers to enter the numbers, what is the possibility that they won't have a clue how that end number comes there? And oh, he said, guaranteed. Just like a salesperson punching, if the computer doesn't come up with it, well, I'm sorry, I guess, I don't know. So I think it's a good idea regardless, but as a board, we'll have to be proactive in trying to help them to understand. So back to what Robert's saying, if we have a spreadsheet, we could go and put a little more weight on English and math and tweak it. But the more complicated it gets, the less and less teachers will actually know. The parent will wonder, well, how did you come up with this bottom number? I don't know, the resource committee gave me a spreadsheet, and I don't like that answer. So something for you to think about. Thank you.